for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 631 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, we celebrate Women's History Month through interviews with Galaxy Gal creator Jay Magnum and Geek Girl creator Sam Johnson. First up is Jay Magnum, who discusses his current Kickstarter for Galaxy Gal number 1. Here's how that book is described. Join us as Commander Gal Gallant, plucky heroine of the intrepid Galaxy Patrol, faces off against her arch-nemesis, the dastardly planet-destroying Dr. Deathbeam. Across two future timelines, including a fun retro timeline and a sleek modern timeline, in this satirical, cheeky romp through the universe, we discuss who Galaxy Gal is, her supporting cast, and what else is coming from Jay's astral graphic novel universe. Be sure to back this project before it concludes on Thursday, March 21 at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Then everything wraps up with Sam Johnson's return to the podcast as we talk about the latest happenings with Geek Girl, including his present Kickstarter for Geek Girl Identity Crisis. The crowdfunding project is described this way: superheroes meet mean girls plus weirdness in the Geek Girl ongoing series. Sam talks about what's going on with Geek Girl and updates us on what else is coming from him in the months ahead. This Kickstarter will conclude on Monday, April 1 at 12 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, so be sure to back this project once you've finished listening to this great interview. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Galaxy Gal issue number 1 is an out-of-this-world sci-fi action and fun comic. Join Gal Gallant as she kicks asteroids when two future timelines collide in this sexy sci-fi action satire. Collector's item issue number 1. Let me make sure I get this in there. This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, March 21 at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. But the good news is, even as we're recording, you have passed that goal. And it's great to welcome back to the podcast Jay Magnum, the creator of the Astral series of sci-fi action-adventure graphic novels and Galaxy Girl, which is spinning out of it. So how you doing, Jay?
Yeah, I'm great, Wayne. How are you? Thanks again for having me on the podcast.
It's good. It's good to talk with you, and I see congratulations are in order. You already got your goal, and you had $4,000 goal, and even as we're talking now, which we're recording a little early, it has you've passed that goal, and you're moving on to other good things. So congrats, Jay. And how long did it take to get your goal met?
I think we made it in something like 9 or 10 days. Wasn't really counting, but really happy that we're there and have exceeded the goal, the funding goal, and just a big thank you to all of our supporters for helping us to reach and exceed that.
Okay, there's a couple of things I should mention. You got a Project We Love from Kickstarter, which is congrats on that too. And as we're talking, then, of course, we're recording this a little early, you are almost at 150 backers. So, boy, you're doing great. There's a lot of people who would like to be in the position you're in, so congrats.
Well, thank you. Yeah, again, I'm really thankful to all of our backers, a lot of whom came from the original Astral series, which is where Galaxy Gal originated. And we're fortunate to have such a great core fan base to come out and support Galaxy Gal. And, of course, all the new backers, too, as well, who have come in.
So that's great. But I'm really happy with that because your stuff is always great stuff and great fun to have. So let's why don't you catch us up on before we jump into Galaxy Girl, Gal. In fact, that's a question I got. Let's talk about the Astral stuff. Where's the rest of the Astral universe before we talk about Galaxy Gal?
Well, as we're speaking here today, we have completed Astral Vengeance issue number 3 and getting that ready for distribution. So prior to that, we've done Kickstarters going back to, I think it was the year 2017. So that's like 7 years back, starting with graphic novel Astral Genesis, second graphic novel Astral Evolution, third one Astral Alliance. And then that's where the Astral Vengeance issues began. So we have 1, 2, 3 of those. And then moving ahead, I think there's going to be a total of 5 in the Astral Vengeance story. So we have 2 more to go and working on those last 2. And then, you know, just taking a quick pause here to spin off Galaxy Gal, which is interesting because that's actually originating from the Astral series itself.
Yeah, talk about that for a second, why don't you? Where did Galaxy Gal come from?
Well, let's see. So, like, way back to Astral Genesis, it was necessary. One of the story points in it was we needed a comic book to be in the Astral universe. So Galaxy Gal is sort of a comic within a comic. That's how it got started. So, like, the characters within the Astral series read issues of Galaxy Gal. That's where it came from originally.
Okay, because let me read a little bit from the Kickstarter page. It says, "Join us as Commander Gal Gallant, plucky heroine of the intrepid Galaxy Patrol, faces off against her arch nemesis, the dastardly planet-destroying Dr. Deathbeam, across 2 future timelines, a fun retro timeline and a sleek modern timeline. In this satirical, cheeky romp through the universe, can Gal stop Dr. Deathbeam from conquering the galaxy? See for yourself." It says there. So, we've talked a little bit about this in the past, but we're going to explore that a little more. This is kind of a shout-out or a hearkening back to when comics were fun. Talk a little bit about what it was that made you want to do this.
Well, just the premise is a lot of fun. So, I don't know. One day I was probably just thinking about it, you know, and writers and creators such as myself, you know, those that are out there will understand this. We do a lot of thinking. you do a lot of thinking. Some people call it daydreaming or whatever. You just kind of, your thoughts just kind of go on. And so, you know, I happened to be thinking about, you know, I think it was probably during when we were doing Astral Evolution, because there's a part in Astral Evolution where some of the characters have to search back through long boxes of Galaxy Gal comics looking for clues for something in the story. And so I was just kind of thinking, and so they had dialogue around, the characters had dialogue around, I remember in this issue she does this, and in this issue she fights that, you know, I forget the exact dialogue, but it was like, okay, so what would those issues be? And then you start to think about what Galaxy Gal's world is, you know, what kind of comic is it? You know, it's more of a, like a stylized, you know, I was thinking more like a kind of like a Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers kind of thing, that classic 50s sci-fi, 40s, 50s kind of thing, almost like you would see the black and white serials. You know, this goes pretty far back. I don't know if the kids these days even have seen any of that or remembered it, but kind of like a stylized vision of the future as seen from the decades of the 40s and the 50s, which is sort of like, you know, the Jetsons or something like that. So that's what I started to think it would look like and be about. And then what would the characters be? Well, you know, you got Commander Gal Gallant, you got the dastardly Dr. Deathbeam. So kind of the archetypes in there and the, you know, the fun interactions that they would have. And that's kind of where the idea got started. And then I think, so in Astral Vengeance number 1, that issue, we had a 5-page intro for Gal in that 50s, 60s comic book setting to open up the story. And that sequence of pages plays a part in the Astral Vengeance story arc overall, more in the last couple of issues of it, which we're working on now. But I thought it would be neat to open up one of our Astro books like that. And so got to thinking about, well, why don't we pretend, and, you know, since this is a comic within a comic, why don't we have our readers open up Astral Vengeance number 1 and read a couple of pages of Galaxy Gal, just like one of our characters in the story, you know, might actually do. So that's what we did, which was kind of cool. Because like I said, we'd never done that in the past. I'd never opened up a comic book in quite that way.
And it's pretty cool. I like it. Now, one of the questions I got to ask, and I don't think I asked you this last time we talked about this, it's called Galaxy Gal. And, you know, most people would have called it Galaxy Girl. But you call it Galaxy Gal. And I think that in a way, that's good because that's very creative. It's not going down the standard route. Why did you decide to call it Galaxy Gal?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And there's a kind of an interesting story behind that whole thing. So I think initially, way back, again, when it was being created to be the comic within the comic in Astral Genesis, I think I did have it in the script as Galaxy Girl. I think that's what it was because, you know, at the time, it wasn't necessary to have the characters of that world built out. It was just a title, and it was just a book that you saw, a comic book in the character's hands with maybe you saw the cover and the title of it. But, you know, there's no content because it's a comic within a comic. You just see the characters in Astral holding this comic book. So it didn't really matter. You know, I just figured, well, we'll theme it kind of like purplish. I don't know, like, because one of the characters in Astral, you know, Lila is purple. And, you know, we'll make it like a stylized version of a heroine, you know, kind of a little bit of a commentary on Lila, who ends up being the heroine of Astral Genesis. So I think it was Galaxy Girl originally. And then I had looked it up. You have to do some due diligence when you're a comic creator and you're creating new titles and new characters. That, you know, you're not either intentionally or unintentionally taking something that somebody has already done, even if it's public domain or something like that. So I remember having to research all these characters and researching Galaxy Girl was one of them. And I think I found somebody already had that. Somebody had already done Galaxy Girl. So I said, how am I going to work this out? Cause I can't really use that because somebody else already had it, you know? So I thought, well, you know, what are we going to call it then? You know, the G and the G go so well together, Galaxy Girl, you know? And I started thinking, well, you know, it's the 40s and 50s, at least at the time, that's what the setting was going to be, or you know, a future from, looked like it was derived out of the 40s and 50s. And so started thinking about those decades. I thought, well, you know, back in those days, girls, you know, sometimes they called gals. So I said, well, what the heck? Let's look it up. So I was looking that up and it looked like nobody had Galaxy Gal. So I said, well, that kind of fits with what we're doing anyway. Mm-hmm. And then kind of later on down the road, I thought, well, and you know, it could be the character's name too, because Gal is, you know, everyone's already familiar with Gal Gadot, or some people don't pronounce the T, say Gal Gadot. I think it's Gal Gadot. So her name is Gal. And I thought, well, you know, so the character's name could also be Gal, and we could make it, you know, like, it's a little stylized, you know, like that, like she's a super goody two shoes character. So why not Gal Gallant? Because the first three letters of Gallant are G-A-L. So it kind of works from a kind of a stylized perspective. So it all kind of sprung from that, you know. But I think somebody, to answer your question, I think somebody already had that one. So I had to pivot over it. And it was actually a good thing that somebody did, because I think we were able to take it a little further than if it were Galaxy Girl. I probably would have had to come up with a name and it wouldn't have been as clever, you know. So it kind of helped.
Sometimes you never know. Some right. people beat you to the punch. It's funny because my podcast is the Wayne's Comics Podcast. When I was trying to find a website, there was a store in Texas that was actually called Wayne's Comics. And I couldn't – they'd already got a website, so I couldn't get the domain name for Wayne's Comics. Right. I had to make a Wayne's Comics Podcast in order to be able to get it. So you know, every once in a while they do that. And I'm kind of glad because, you know, it worked out better, I think, as far as things go. So I got – now, I do have to talk about – well, first thing I want to mention, this is a perfect time, by the way, to have a female lead comic come out because this is Women's History Month. And so this is a perfect time to have a comic that has a female lead character, just a perfect time to do that. And of course, that leads me to ask you about how did you approach writing a female lead character? Now, obviously, you've got two different versions of the same character. Of course, some people say, well, why didn't you have a girl write it? Talk about what it was, the challenges of being a guy writing a gal comic.
I don't know. It's never really been an issue for me. I think because up to this point, I had been writing Astral for so long, for years, And, you know, Astral's more of an ensemble. You know, you have a core four or five characters, and out of the, if you call it five, three of the five would be females and two would be males. So I don't know. I'd never really had a problem. I mean, it's more like, more than male and female. I think it's just more like people's personalities. You know, the personality comes through, and then the gender is kind of maybe a secondary thing. You kind of have to know who the character is, right? So, and you know, writers, you have to do a lot of reading. I mean, what makes a good writer? A good writer reads a lot, right? You have to have read a lot. And I think it was, you know, just like I'm sure all of us people listening to the podcast and yourself, you know, we all read comic books, you know, when we were kids, whether for you, that's 10 years ago, 20 years ago, for me, it's like 30 or 40 years ago now. So, you know, you read them and you kind of, you see how the male characters are written, female characters are written in different settings, different personalities. I don't know. It's never really bothered me. It's never really something that's factored in. It just who's the character. And then it goes back to this thinking or daydreaming that, you know, a lot of writers and creators do. You imagine the characters in your mind, and, you know, they speak, you know, to other characters in your mind, or they may even speak directly to you. And you kind of get to know them like you'd get to know a friend. And then it's not hard to write them because they kind of write their own dialogue in your head. At least that's the way it is for me anyway. I'm sure other people are the same thing.
See, it reminds me of the early Justice League when Gardner Fox was writing it way back when it first started. Batman and Wonder Woman often teamed up. And a lot of people complained that Batman and Wonder Woman sounded the same. And I never thought that when I watched, you know, Wonder Woman she was stronger than Batman, stuff like that. So she would always be bailing him out. And I just always thought that Wonder Woman was a great, you know, partner for Batman because he was kind of the thinker and she was the doer. And so to me, it never bothered me. But there are so many people who complained bitterly that Wonder Woman didn't act like a woman. I was like, really? You know, she saved his bacon so many times. I didn't see what the problem was. So for me, I get a kick out of that when people say that. Of course, there are people, I think we talked about this, that Captain Janeway, like in Voyager, she was supposed to be feminine. She was supposed to be solving all of her problems by talking things out. And she shouldn't be firing phasers. She should always be maternal and stuff. And I was always like, I don't know. On television, that's going to be kind of slow. So to me, I like what you're doing with it. I think it works really well.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's obviously something over the past few months I've given a lot of thought to. And, you know, we have fun with the characters. It's somewhat of Gal is the lead of, you know, Galaxy Gal, but there are supporting characters as well. And so it's, you know, you have to learn how to write those characters. But I think it's mainly just that I'd been doing Astral so long and then, you know, you kind of follow the pattern, how to write for those characters and how to write for Gal and her supporting characters. It's sort of the same thing. You just have to imagine them, imagine what their motivations are, imagine who the other characters are and how they would interact with one another. And once you understand all the characters as a full, you know, three-dimensional sort of person or personality, they really kind of write themselves. So it's really hadn't been difficult for me, but it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it was a fun book to do, and you know, it's a comic book. It's not a graphic novel. So it's nice to do something that's a little shorter this time, you know, than one of those story arcs that goes 110 pages or 120 pages. It's kind of refreshing.
Now, see, I'm kind of interested to see how you alternate between the retro and the modern versions. And I have to say right off the bat, there's some preview pages on the Kickstarter page. And if you go when she blasts through the room, she says something. She says, "Your days of mischief are over, Dr. Deathbeam. By Zoc, you won't escape us this time." And what that hearkened me right back to, I don't know if you ever saw it, the Batman 66 movie. I was in the theater watching it, and Batman gets dipped in water. And when they pull him out, he's got a shark on his leg. And he has to get the bat shark repellent out of his thing and stuff like that. Right. But what got me was when they pulled him out of the water, people laughed at the fact that he had a shark on his leg. And as a kid, of course, I'm going, you wouldn't laugh if you had a shark on your leg. kind of stuff, you know? And so I was harkened right back to that era. And I thought, this is very true to how those things were written and done in that era. So I thought that was very well done.
So it's like jumping the shark, right?
Yeah.
Fonzie jumping the shark.
That whole thing. But it's kind of what I like to, right after, she's got a male sidekick with her. And he says, I just love your passion for justice. And then, of course, the bad guy says, oh, you've got to be kidding. And her response is actually, no, I'm Gal. This is Cadet Kidding. Which made me laugh right out loud. I thought that was great stuff. Really good. So there's a lot of great allusion to how things were written in the past and having fun with it.
Yeah, and so that's sort of a running joke. We had that in that 5-page beginning to Astro Vengeance issue 1, where it was 5 pages of Galaxy Gal to start it off. And there's sort of a running gag about, one of the other characters will say something to Gal and she thinks they're getting her name wrong or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. We're getting somebody else's name wrong, so we carried that over into the first issue, the first full issue that's on Kickstarter right now. So that was fun. And, you know, the two different timelines or two different futures, I guess you would call it. That's actually something because I worked with Bill Walco on this. And of course, Bill, you know, has done the Hero Business online comic, which I've admired for years. And he's also worked with Brian Michael Bendis, and he did a Stanley tribute. I think that was in the New York Times. And so Bill's really experienced. He's been doing comics for a decade, maybe a decade and a half, doing his own stuff. He writes and illustrates. So working with Bill on this, he was actually my first choice as artist for this one because I thought his style fit everything perfectly. But when we had the initial discussions and he agreed, I'd love to do, you know, Galaxy Gal as a full issue. It was kind of like, well, what should the story be? I didn't really have I had written a treatment that was more like a Saturday morning cartoon. And he was like, it's not really, it's too simplistic, you know? So the first one sort of got rejected. It wasn't really deep enough, you know, you would have to pad that out, you know, to fill 22, 24 pages or whatever. So it was sort of like, what do we do for the story? And so it was like, well, he had done the 5-page intro to Astro Vengeance 1. And I said, well, it's going to be sort of, we can do something like that. And he said, well, but you know, again, it's fun for 5 pages, but you know, you carry that through 20 some pages, kind of like a one note joke. You don't really get anywhere with it. It's all kind of fluff. So I said, well, so what do we do? What would be, you know, more interesting than that? I mean, and then I thought, well, you know, do we really want to leave Gal in this hyper stylized 40s, 50s vision of the future? Or would it be fun to do like, what would Gal be like in like a modern future? You know, so I started thinking about that. And then I said, bam, you know, kind of hits you, you know, like a hammer, and you go, that's the story. We have to have some kind of story that moves Gal from like a stylized 40s, 50s vision of the future to a modern future where we can do a lot more. You know, the storylines would be, you have more possibilities. It's not a one note joke. So what we need is we need some kind of story or mystery or something that bridges two different futures. So that was the key to the story. And when I mentioned that to Bill, he was like, yeah, you know, that's more like it. So then I sort of wrote a treatment and we sort of went back on and forth on that a little bit and settled on this future or plot or storyline, a mystery that would span two futures, two different futures, right? So she starts off in the one future, the retro future, and then, you know, something happens, you know, I don't want to give it away. And then we end up, you know, in this modern future, but it's sort of the same story that's carried over and the same sort of mystery and, you know, what's going on. So that was the key to the whole thing. That's what unlocked this first full Galaxy Gal book that we're really excited about, you know.
Well, I have to point out that the same humor goes over into the quote unquote modern part. There are pages in the modern, and there's a wonderful thing where she is in a different costume and says, wow, nice lines, but does that make my butt look big? And I guess it's Kidding who says, don't worry, Gal, here in the future, we pride ourselves on embracing booties of all sizes. And her response just killed me. She says, wow, this really is a brave new world, she goes. I laughed out loud when I saw that. That was hilarious. I thought that was a great bit. What a funny bit of line to jump right into the beginning. So that killed me.
And what's funny about that, even more funny, is I think that particular joke, I think that was actually Bill's. I think he recommended that. I think I had written into the script about, you know, something like, you know, Gal donning her new outfit, you know, Gal looks in the mirror and ponders the question that all superheroines have pondered, you know, throughout the ages, you know. And that's where she has the line, hey, nice lines, but does it make my butt look big? And Bill says, well, you know, he says, you can't just say, I mean, that's been done, right? And Bill's thing is, you have to kind of, if you're going to do something like that, you have to put more of a twist on it. Like, what makes it new? What makes it different? So he said, you know, why don't we have Kidding pop in and, you know, say the line about we embrace booties of all sizes or something. So that was Bill's contribution. I can't take credit for that, but... But yeah, the humor's great, and I did like that when I laughed. So I said that kind of made it in.
That's funny because in the original thing, Kidding is much shorter and younger than she is. And now in the future, he's taller. He seems to be taller and older with that. So there's another change that happens with the different timelines and stuff like that. So great.
Yeah, fun. Yeah, that's one of the changes between the two futures.
That's great fun. So is this basically a one shot? Is that all you're gonna do? Is do this one time, or do you have more Galaxy Gal stuff in mind?
Well, yeah, it's really the $64,000 question, or is it $64 million now? I keep forgetting. That is really the key question, isn't it? And it kind of what it boils down to is anything else, Wayne, right? So it boils down to, you know, people have to like it, people have to want it. And that's why we're doing the Kickstarter right now. So, I mean, as we're talking here, the Kickstarter's live. I'm sure as this podcast is being published and uploaded, it'll still be live. We'll probably still have a couple of weeks on the Kickstarter or whatever. So I would urge people, you know, to go and check it out. And if they like it, to pledge, because that's really like with any comic book series, that's what it all boils down to, right? If there's enough people that like it, and if there's enough people that demand it, you know, then we can come out with subsequent issues. So is it a one shot? Well, only if it did poorly, it would probably be a one shot. I would like to do more, depending on how the Kickstarter, you know, finishes. Maybe if it does really well, we can do more sooner. If it, you know, does middling or something, maybe it takes a little bit longer. I do have ideas for future Galaxy Gal issues. And that's one of the reasons I think I said before I wanted to move Gal into more like a modern era, because there's more possibilities for storylines and stuff like that. So Gal will stay in this modern type future. And like I said, I do have some ideas, and I would love to move ahead with that. But you know, it's one of those things where people have to like it and people have to buy it. You know, that's the bottom line. So the answer is yes. If we get enough demand for it, there will be more. And I would like there to be more, and Bill would too.
Well, you've already met your goal, and you've got, again, it's March 21st, 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I probably shouldn't ask this, and if you don't want to say, go, you know, don't answer it, but is there a number you want to reach that would guarantee you would go on to another issue?
Guarantee? I don't know. Like I said, Wayne, it's so hard to put numbers on this, because I think numbers are very relative. I mean, what is a good number in a kind of a malaise economy that we're in right now? You know, a good number today wouldn't look like a good number last year. Yeah, don't want to put exact numbers on it. I mean, as we sit here, we're around the $5,000 mark, somewhere around there. So we've surpassed goal, and we're on our way over goal. You know, it would need to get more, I think, at this point to say for sure we're going to move ahead. But and I think we'll make that. I mean, I have no idea where it's going to end up as far as like a final number, but you know. We would have to do a little bit more anyway to see how things are going to shake out for the future. And I think one of those things where it's all about motivations too. It's how much do I want to do it? How much does Bill want to do it? How well does the Kickstarter do? How well do the issues sell after the Kickstarter, whether it's shows or comic shops or whatever? And that will kind of tell us, and you know, where's the economy going, right? Because we don't know if the economy is going to get better at this point or worse at this point. I'm talking U.S. economy, maybe global economy, right? Because if the economy gets worse, well, you know, obviously that's going to lengthen the amount of time it's going to take us to potentially come out with another one. If the economy starts booming again, it gets a little easier, right? So,
right.
I would very much love to come out with future issues, but you know, again, it's all about the support, and it's about how much support we can get. So, if there's any backers out there or potential backers, I would say pledge if you like it, because the higher we go, the faster it's going to happen, and that's really the bottom line.
Okay, very good. I'm sure as a creator, Galaxy Gal is a nice change of pace for Astral. Because Astral is very serious, down-to-earth, science fiction, you know, basic stuff. And this is a lot more comic booky, a lot more fun kind of thing to do. So I'm sure that stretches different muscles, and that's probably something you enjoy doing. You don't only want to do Astral your whole time. As fun as that is, and as great as that has turned out to be, it would be nice to be able to do other things as well. And so I think you're off to a good start with this. Like I said, if you just look at the preview pages, you get a good idea as what kinds of good things. I mean, there's different kind of posters and different things showing different characters and stuff going on. There is a whole lot of good stuff that can happen with Galaxy Gal. So I would encourage people to get in there and support this thing, because it's got a lot of potential. I know that's often a deadly thing to say about something. It's got so much potential. I just think this is a lot of fun. I think it would be something, and I can use more fun in my reading. So I would like to see more Galaxy Gal myself. And so I encourage people to get out there as soon as you hear it, and be sure to get out there and support this thing, because we could use some more adventure and daring do and buckle that swash in our reading. So I have to say, it's just excellently done. And I want to see more.
Well, thanks, Wayne. I appreciate the endorsement there. And, you know, it really is. It's been nice to take a break from Astral, especially Astral Vengeance, the direction that's going in. You know, I know we're here to talk about Galaxy Gal, but, you know, Astral Vengeance having, you know, demons and they're biting and slashing at each other, you know, that's kind of a change for the Astral series, but it takes it into a, you know, a certain area, you know, and you get into this. It's almost got like a horror vibe to it, you know. So taking a break to do Galaxy Gal has been refreshing, and it has been a lot of fun. And it is. I mean, Galaxy Gal is meant to be, you know, escapist fun, and that's really what it is. So it's like Friday night reading, Saturday night reading, feel good type stuff. And I know that's one reason Bill likes it. The Hero Business has the same kind of vibe to it, I think, and he did that for years, and so that's one of the things I think he enjoys about it. So yeah, we're really happy to bring it to everybody. I'm excited, you know. This is the first chance we've had to do it. We got such a good response to those pages, those first five intro pages that he did for Astral Vengeance, that I couldn't wait to work with him again on this and work with our whole team again. It's been great. It's been a lot of fun, and I can't wait to get this book into people's hands. I think it's going to be terrific. Like you said, we're funded, so it's definitely happening. Hopefully, you know, the higher we go, the quicker and sooner the chances are, and better the chances are, that we'll be able to come out with more Galaxy Gal. And, you know, to your point, I do have some more different things coming out starting this summer, some different stuff. So that should be fun as well.
So how far along is the Galaxy Gal comic, the one shot?
The one we're working on right now, issue number one. Yeah. So it's, I would hesitate to call it a one-shot. I think we will do more. So it's a self-contained story. It's more episodic than Astral is. But where are we on it? It's 100% done. It's complete. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's basically ready. And I think I have that somewhere on the campaign page where the book is done. And so as soon as the campaign ends and the funds are collected, we'll start to get the digital versions distributed to backers that ordered a digital edition of it, the PDFs, and then it'll go for printing essentially immediately, which printing these days, supply chain issues and stuff like that, it could take a month to 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks on the outside to get it printed. And then after that, I got to get shipped. So it's still going to take a month or two after we distribute digital editions to go. But I mean, that's about the fastest you can do it, because I mean, I would print now, but we don't know how many copies to print. That's really the only thing that's holding us back. Otherwise, I would have already printed it. But you know, if we have a really good response, which I think we're getting, obviously you want to print more copies. You want to be sure everybody's covered. So that's the only reason that I haven't sent it for printing right now. We just want to see how many people we're going to get to order it. It's essentially a pre-order. I mean, it's a done deal. It's going to happen. So,
see, now you've raised an issue that I got to ask about, and this is why I consider it a one-shot. Issue number two usually sells in comic shops about 50% of what issue number one does. So I was wondering, are you planning on continuing the numbering, like having Galaxy Gal number two, or maybe having Galaxy Gal something subtitled different, just so you can call it number one, because number ones always sell better than number twos. Have you thought, of course you're so busy doing number one, I don't know if you've worried about that yet. Have you considered about what to do as far as numbering goes?
Yeah, I mean, I have thought about it. Don't know. It kind of depends on what we're going to do for a second Galaxy Gal. I mean, it would technically be an issue number two, no matter what you called it or what the story was. But yeah, thoughts entered my mind. I mean, I've heard that as well. I've heard, yeah, number two, number three issues, they don't sell as well as the first one. But I think it's different. I think Kickstarter and the crowdfunding platforms like Indiegogo, I think that they are game changers. And I think that it is possible to actually increase your sales. And I mean, several creators out there have done that, where their second campaign, they've actually sold more than their first one. So if we're simply talking about like a diamond distribution to a comic shop, you know, in a serialized comic where you're going to, you know, it's going to be issue 1, 2, 3 in their monthly and all that. Yeah, I can see that. And probably the quality of the storytelling does decrease, and probably the sale. I mean, we've all seen the charts, probably definitely the sales of subsequent issues would decrease. But, you know, when you're talking about Kickstarter and you're talking about, you don't have to, you know, you're not locked into a monthly issue type cadence where you have to come up with a story and the creative process gets stifled because, you know, you're kind of forced to, what are we going to do now? And you're not ready. I think, you know, we can take the time to make sure that we have a good story. And that's what Bill's all about. He's always challenging me. You have to have a good story. And so I think I submitted a treatment to him for like a second adventure for Gal, and you know, he was like, wow, this is really deep. You know, he liked it. So we do have a plan going forward, but it's all about that quality of the story to me, since we're not forced into a monthly issue cadence type thing. So, you know, when will it come out? If we do a second one, will it come out this year, next year, whatever? And the answer to that is, however long it takes for us, assuming we do go forward, that we do have a quality story, and that we do take the time to do the artwork right and do everything right and come with quality. And I think if you do that, which we will, and I think you are looking at a proposition where you're really going to probably increase your sales and bringing even more people in. And so when you're selling that second adventure, you're also selling a catch-up for the people that are new that didn't get the first one on the first Kickstarter. So that's another way to increase sales. You're selling your, you know, your back issue, your first one along with the second one. And so even if your number two issue sales alone don't exceed the number one, which they probably would, but even if they didn't, you're still moving copies of the first one, so your overall sales, I think, are still going to be more. But I mean, there's creators out there who their subsequent second, third, fourth issues have exceeded the sales of their first one. So I'm not worried about that. I think if we tell a good story, bottom line, I think the sales will be there. And I think the people on Kickstarter are of that mindset, and they've always come out for Astral, so I'm sure they'll come out for Gal again.
Because, you know, I've seen other Kickstarters where they don't say issue number two, they say issue 1 to 2 and 1 to 4. And yeah, they always allow you, if you didn't get the first one for some reason, you can always go back and pick it up and stuff like that. So
sure,
you're right. It's a whole nother ball game. I'm still living in a comic shop world where in my head where we have to worry about those kind of things. But yeah, Kickstarter has certainly changed how those things happen. So that's a good thing. I'd actually like to get away from that notion that number one gets so much and then number two gets 50% of that and number three gets 50% of that, and then just keeps going down, 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 down. It's nice to see the second or third or the fourth actually do better, would be nice.
Yeah, I think that actually happened. I'm remembering the Astral Alliance and Astral Evolution graphic novels that were ordered through Kickstarter. Each of those campaigns surpassed the amount of Genesis that we moved initially. So it did actually happen on the Astrals. And of course, when we went to comic books for Astral Vengeance, we are doing those campaigns as the first one and then one and two and then one, two, three, that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, I'm living proof. It does happen. And we have done that on Astral. So I'm not worried about it.
Cool.
I think you tell a quality story, you sell a quality book, which we are getting. And the quality is not just in the story and the art, it's in the materials too. I mean, we're doing upgraded cover stock, even the basic cover stock. We're doing upgraded paper, the glossy stuff, the heavier that feels really good in your hands. We've got holographic covers, a hollow foil, and sparkle foil. So, I mean, I think you have quality art, you have a quality story, you have quality materials. I think that that does it for you. I think that puts you ahead of most of the people that are out there. It's definitely a quality product, and I think people come out for that.
Great. Well, yeah. I'm glad to hear that, because quality is what matters. And I've often told people, if it's good, you know, do it when it's ready. Don't necessarily do it on a monthly bit, because if we'd rather you wait and get it done right than do it every month, because it's quality that matters, not the rapidity, you know, over and over again. That's not the way to make it anymore.
Certainly. So we strive for that. And, you know, there's lots more coming. We got some new and different projects over the summer, and then in the fall, it's back to continue Astral Vengeance with a fourth issue. So we'll do that again. We'll have a campaign for Astral Vengeance 1-4 and go from there. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think, this year.
Okay, well, right to the next question is, how do we keep up with your stuff? Of course, you've got the Pet Piranha website. Do you want to give people on social media, what's the best way to keep up with what you're doing?
Well, I would say, you know, an obvious way is, you know, hear me say it so much on this podcast, you know, pledge for one of the books, you know, even right now, Galaxy Gal, that's the best way, because if you pledge, even if it's for like a digital edition or something like that, or even like a $5 donation to the campaign, then obviously, you know, we've got your information through Kickstarter. We keep up through updates. That's probably the best way, because since I'm doing so many of these Kickstarters this year, I think I'm set to do 3 or 4 Kickstarters this year for different things.
Wow.
So Gal is the one, and then we're doing Astral again in the fall, and we've got some more spinoffs from Astral coming up. We've got some new and different and interesting stuff going over the summer, which would be different. So spending so much time on that and, you know, messaging people through Kickstarter for various reasons and, you know, publishing the updates on the campaigns. I mean, everybody that creates an account on Kickstarter will automatically get the updates from me once they pledge. You have to pledge. That's the only key. So you pledge one of the campaigns, you get the updates. And, you know, I do have an email list, which you can join. But again, the easiest way is to catch that through the updates, through the Kickstarters. But, you know, a lot of news about our new and upcoming projects, you know, I'll broadcast it as part of one of the updates to the existing campaign. So like, you know, for Galaxy Gal, you know, I'm sending out the updates as we're going along on the campaign. And then when the campaign ends, we'll assess the situation, see what we're doing, give some updates on like logistical stuff for the printing and the distribution of the books. And then I'll do some talking about, you know, our upcoming projects, you know, the stuff coming up this summer and Astral again in the fall, that kind of thing. So that's the easiest way. Of course, you can always email me too if you want to receive updates. It's really tough. My email address is really hard. It's like super difficult to remember. It's jmagnum@petpiranhaentertainment.com. Because I know it's really tough, right?
And the website is petpiranhaentertainment.com too, so you can
correct
go there. There's also one for astrographicnovel.com, and Galaxy Gal Comic has its own .com too. So
they just kind of redirect back. It all goes back to the same site anyway. I don't maintain 3 different sites, but those are just redirect URLs. But yeah, and you know, it's a funny story about that too. The Galaxy Gal Comic .com thing, the way they do these domain names now, I tried to I think Galaxy Gal was available, but because, you know, Galaxy and Gal are two very searched items in Google or whatever, you put them together, well, we know that's could be a popular combination and really help your business. They wanted like $700 or $800 to register that domain. I'm like, okay, what about Galaxy Gal Comic? And that was like $9 or something. I'm like, hey, man, give me that. It's economical too, right?
right. That's just funny. That's funny because I website names are like I said, I had trouble with mine because of the way it was named. But that's just great. So okay, so there's all kinds of good. This is the current thing you're working on. We're gonna get back to Astral in the fall. Other good things coming. I don't know, Jay. You're doing so much good stuff. It's great to keep up with, and so much good material. And as I have often said on my little YouTube thing, I gave your comic, the Astral graphic series, the highest rating I've ever given somebody. So if you haven't been getting the Astral graphic novels, I highly encourage you to do that. Go on to the Galaxy Gal stuff, and you can order them there and catch up with all this good stuff. Are you going to – have you thought about putting like a trade paperback where you have the stuff from the Astral graphic novels that had Galaxy Gal in it? To go with this, you say individual issues, you know, if you collect them over time?
Yeah, so that's actually an interesting question. So, yeah, so just kind of recap the whole thing. Astral Genesis, Astral Evolution, and Astral Alliance are already collected edition. They're already graphic novels of like 110, 120 pages. So you can get those as, you know, complete books. Astral Vengeance, obviously we're coming out with the issues now. Will that be collected in a book? I mean, I don't have any plans right now. It's all issues, maybe sometime in the future. If we're talking about Galaxy Gal, well, you know, I'm not opposed to it. I mean, it could happen at some point, but I mean, to do, again, my opinion, some people may have different opinions, but I think to do a collected edition or like a graphic novel, I think for Galaxy Gal, it would be, because those Galaxy Gal comics are kind of episodic, where Astral is more serialized, right? So you could put like three or four, I think minimum it would have to be, Galaxy Gal episodic comics and collect them into a collected edition like a TPB. But that means we'd have to have at least three or four Galaxy Gal out there. And it would be neat because I think we could include some really cool supplementary stuff as like that relates to the development of Galaxy Gal and maybe some of Bill's, you know, early sketches, which were really fun. Those are really cool. We could put that as like some back matter or some bonus material. So it would be fun. But again, right now we're far way off. We just have the one issue right now. So that's another reason that's to incentivize us to, make more Galaxy Gal comic books is to, you know, buy the ones we have and buy the future ones. And if people keep doing that and we can come out with at least three or four, then yeah, I think a TPB eventually could be in the cards, you know, down the road. So, yeah.
So the message is buy the issues. If you buy the issues, you're down the road, you can get all this extra good stuff with the trade paperback if they decide to go that route. And once again, it's called Galaxy Gal, issue number one, Out of This World, Sci-Fi, Action, and Fun. And this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, March 21 at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And as we've also said, you've already passed your goal. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't support it. Now's the time to jump on because there's likely to be a lot of kind of good stretch goals and things like that. So this is the great time to get on and support Galaxy Gal and have some fun in comics, which we sorely need. So, Jay, you're doing wonderful stuff. It's so good to talk with you. We'll have to do this again when more stuff is coming down the pike. But this looks like a lot of fun. And I also, as you know, I enjoy Astral too. So if I see your name on something, I buy it. So I encourage people to do the same.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show again, Wayne. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, definitely get out there. If you've listened this long, thank you for bearing with us and listening. In fact, Wayne, the Astral saga of graphic novels and comic books up through Astral Vengeance is available on the Galaxy Gal Kickstarter as well. So you can order that if you want while you're out there. But it's always fun being on here. Thanks again for your support, for your listeners. Once again, thank you for listening. Thank you for bearing with me. Love to have you guys. Love to have you pledge the campaign. And cheers. It's been a lot of fun. It's always fun coming on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's rare on this podcast when I actually get to quote myself, but here goes. Geek Girl puts the human back in superhuman. I said this a while back, and I am talking with the creator of Geek Girl again, and that is Sam Johnson, who has a Kickstarter going on for Geek Girl, of all things. How's it going, Sam?
It's going well, thank you. Wayne, how are you?
Good, good. Let me read the description as it says on Kickstarter. It says, Superheroes meets Mean Girls plus Weirdness in the Geek Girl ongoing series. And I was talking with you before we started to record about the fact that you and I have been talking about Geek Girl almost as long as I've been doing this podcast, and that's about 13 years. But you told me you've actually been working on Geek Girl longer than that. Why don't you tell people when Geek Girl actually got started?
Well, there was an issue zero in 2009, so I think what we're talking about in terms of when you and I, since you and I have been discussing, we're probably talking about like the mini series, because there was a four-issue mini and then Kickstarters to try and build the audience enough to justify the second series becoming ongoing, whereas it was maybe going to be a mini, maybe an ongoing, and that was successful. So here we are. The ongoing series now up to issues 11 and 12.
Right, right. And that's what the Kickstarter is for. Now, it's for Identity Crisis. It says Geek Girl : Identity Crisis if you're looking for the thing on Kickstarter. And I got to read a book that is already out. It's Geek Girl number 11. It's the Deluxe Jump-On Edition. And I have to say, I'm spooked.
Right.
There was a book that came out that still to this day frightens me. It was what was the name of the group? It was a DC book. It was about Omega Men, and there was this alien creature that was like nebulous, and if you put you in the room with the nebulous creature, it would attach itself to you and drain everything you were and become you. And you would become this nebulous blob. And the creature would then be working with the bad guys with all your knowledge and abilities and everything. So the end of one issue ended up with this woman is actually being sucked dry and screaming loudly. And I couldn't wait for the next issue to hit because I was so terrified of what was going to happen to this woman. And luckily, the process got interrupted in time and she didn't end up getting anything. But some of that, and you're taking it a little more spookily, I think, with the Identity Crisis. Why don't you talk about – well, first, why don't you give a description of what Geek Girl is, just in case there's somebody who doesn't know or hasn't heard about Geek Girl before.
So Geek Girl was a hot, popular college co-ed who landed a pair of super tech glasses on a drunken whim that gave her super strength and flight abilities. Initially not used to them, she was super klutzy and alienated her cool kid clique. Since then has got a handle of them, grown into a proper superheroine, and been given the chance to front a super team. That's the basic setup. But what I'm calling back to the quote you said about earlier about Geek Girl putting the human into superhuman, that's particularly kind of prevalent in this new Identity Crisis art, which is Geek Girl is kind of Ruby Kay was like an it girl who got whatever she wanted, and she's grown into this superheroine now. This identity thief villain decides they want to be her, and literally strip her of her identity. So as in steal her looks. So she becomes, this is kind of what you were alluding to with the Omega Men thing. She becomes like a sort of withered shell. And now Identity Thief is running around looking like Geek Girl, and people think she is Geek Girl. So that's basically the setup of this the beginning of this identity crisis arc. The Geek Girl on Deluxe is a jump on issue, which has the content from Geek Girl 11, which is Identity Crisis Part 1, and the content from the Fake Geek Girl one shot. Now, both of these are available individually. And what I was going with the human in the superhuman thing is when Identity Crisis kicks in, Identity Thief has not only stolen Ruby's looks, but has tapped into her mind and kind of borrowed her memories. Now, things are going to change in terms of, it's difficult to say, let's just say Ruby, as a result of this, does have her own identity crisis about herself and about being Geek Girl.
Wow. Because the way that the book 11 starts out, there's a fight going on. Geek Girl is with her partner, the part of the team, and they're out looking for trouble, and they come across, what's the name of the superhero fighting a guy in the street? Pitbull, that's right. Pitbull in the and they're fighting in the street, and when they decide to get involved, suddenly the guy that's fighting Pitbull looks like the girl who hits the guy and becomes a woman, and becomes the woman that is the partner of Geek Girl. And then suddenly this woman looks at Geek Girl and says, "Geek Girl, I want to be you," she says. And her eyes get a solid white, and obviously something's going on. And suddenly, and Pitbull says, "Don't hit her, don't touch her, she'll steal your powers." And suddenly, Geeko, her eyes go white. And this is a perfect opportunity for you to flashback and talk about how things got the way they are, which I really like. And it's great. Now, you did it right. You did, the flashbacks are in black and white, and what's going on currently is in color. And there's just amazing stuff going on. I it spooks me out, I do have to say. I'm just, because, see, now she, at the end of issue 11, do we spoil that, or the main issue, the main part of the issue?
I think we can do that, because the deluxe, you've got the main issue, as it were, and then the Fake Geek Girl one shot. So in order to, I think we've kind of, don't worry about that, I think, because this is all part of a big arc.
Well, what she says is what Geek Girl says, she thinks that she's dying because of all the flashbacks. And she says, "What have you done to me?" And she hits her, which of course was the thing that the Pitbull said not to do, drops to the ground. And as she drops to the ground, you look at the girl that she hit, and suddenly she looks like Ruby Kay.
Yeah.
And what's Ruby's, the real Ruby's condition at this point?
Well, I think if we go any further into that, we'll probably
have okay.
But basically, what you're talking about here is when Ruby and her teammate, the Minger, encounter Pitbull fighting Identity Thief. Identity Thief has goaded Pitbull into hitting them, Pitbull being unaware that if you do that, that's how they steal your identity. So when the Minger then lands on, again, not knowing about this power setup, lands feet first on top of Identity Thief, who has at that point stolen Pitbull's identity, the impact the Minger makes with them makes them then steal the Minger's identity, because basically hitting them causes them to steal your identity, which they deliberately did with Pitbull. They didn't with the Minger. But then they see Geek Girl and they're like, "Oh, I want to be you." However, Pitbull's then warning Geek Girl, "Don't hit her, because that's what's going to happen." So Geek Girl is like, well, I can't just let them go, so accuse them. Identity thief drives off in a car, at this point resembling the Minger. Geek Girl in pursuit. Geek Girl is, while pursuing her, Identity Thief has set up this sort of psychic link between them, which is why the eye is going white, where Identity Thief is tapping into Geek Girl's memories to learn who she is, what she's about, in order that she can, quote-unquote, become her.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Oh, spooky, 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 this stuff. I I see now. I want to know what happens to poor Ruby Kay when apparently when she takes her identity, what condition is Ruby in when this is all over with? So that's something I want to see, because in the there's at the back there's what's called Geek Girl Interrupted.
Yeah, so this is the Fate Geek Girl one shot is available individually, and this Geek Girl 11 Deluxe collects the content from Geek Girl 11 Part 1 and the Fate Geek Girl One Shot. Now, the Fate Geek Girl One Shot is where Identity Thief has now effectively become Ruby. So she's taken her identity. Now she's going to take over her life.
Wow, see, that's spooky. That's spooky. So where's Ruby when all this? See, that's something I want to know. What happened to her now?
Well, Ruby is left unconscious at the end of issue 11 by hitting Identity Thief an emotional reaction because she thinks Identity Thief is killing her. But obviously hitting Identity Thief causes Identity to strip Ruby of her physical identity, and Identity Thief has also tapped into mind to get memories of her personality. So where Ruby stands at that point is left lying unconscious while Identity Thief goes away and attempts to quote-unquote, become her.
So she's still laying on the ground unconscious while all this other stuff's going on, or is she?
Well,
are we going to find that
out? I mean, if there's a thing at the end of the Fate Geek Girl one-shot and Geek Girl 11 Deluxe in the last page, we see what's happening with Ruby.
Okay. So something to be aware of. Because this spooks me out. I have to say, this is a really where did the idea come from for you to go this route? Because in the past, you haven't done this kind of thing. Yeah, so where did the idea come from?
I'm not sure, really. I couldn't really pinpoint that, but it's given up an opportunity to do something different in this Fate Geek Girl one shot, where it's much more. Well, it's got this sort of spooky, if you like, undertone to it, but it's basically, if you didn't know that this was Identity Thief with Ruby's identity, for all intents and purposes, it looks like Ruby Kay's friends are at a club night and Ruby Kay joins them at the club night, and they have a fun night at a club night. However, we know that this isn't the real Ruby Kay. So we've got some good character stuff going on there, because Karen Carpenter, who was Ruby's former friend, sort of leader of their Mean Girl clique, Ruby being the lesser of the Mean Girls, they'd fallen out. They'd had some disagreements, and Karen was left basically thinking Ruby was crazy. And now, in the guise of Ruby, Identity Thief pitches up and looks like she's trying to become friends again, in inverted commas, with Karen. So, yeah, all these people that are interacting with Identity Thief at this point perceive her to be the actual Ruby Kay.
Now, see, what strikes me is interesting is that when we first see Identity Thief, he's in Pitbull's. He's taken over, but Pitbull, he didn't do this brain merge with Pitbull like he did with her.
Yeah, because it's a significant thing when you get the line from Identity Thief when they see Ruby that they say, "I want to be you." So what was going on with Pitbull? They just wanted to take his super strength. That was the beginning and end of it. They just wanted to take his super strength and have some fun with that. And then a better offer came along where this, because Ruby is quite well known where they are in Acorn Ridge in Maine. The identity thief saw them, saw her, and was like, I could do some more with this than just taking your powers.
Mm. So who is Identity Thief really? Are we going to find that out in the story?
Not for some time. I mean, it's a big arc that's going to have a real, as I say, character thing going on with Ruby. So the 11 Deluxe Fate Geek Girl one shot, Geek Girl 12 are out now, and then the Kickstarter, which is also live, has the rest of the arc on it, so you can get the entire Identity Crisis arc at the Kickstarter, geekgirlcomics.com. The link to that. So yeah, there's a lot going on with it, and it's it's a real things are going to change for Ruby.
Hmm. So when does the Kickstarter end? Maybe we should talk about that.
Kickstarter runs through to the end of March.
End of March. Okay. So, and of course I it wouldn't be me if I didn't talk about one of my favorite characters of the whole thing, and that's Summer.
Yeah.
Summer's story takes a really interesting turn and number 11, which, you know, of course we should talk about the fact that there was a time when Ruby wasn't Geek Girl and Summer took over.
Yeah.
And then when Ruby took back the identity, Summer was sort of like, she missed being a hero like that. Maybe that's the way to say that.
Yeah. And, I mean, Summer's always been like a driving force behind it. Her dad's like a big comic book superhero geek, and she loved the whole idea. She actually kind of came up with the idea of, obviously, as comic fans, we would naturally think you get superpowers, you become a superhero. But Ruby Kay, with her lifestyle and mentality, would not necessarily thought that. It was kind of Summer that pushed her into it. Ruby ended up in a coma at one point, and that's why Summer filled in as Geek Girl, because all you need is the glasses, the tech in the glasses that give you the super powers. So Summer filled in for a bit, and then when Ruby came back, Ruby returned to being Geek Girl, and Summer has kind of missed it. And now with this super team thing happening that Geek Girl's fronting, which is just coming together, while it's been coming together, one of the members quit. So there's a gap there. So Summer has been in contact with the guy, Johnny Carlisle, who's behind this super team, discussing the idea of her getting superpowers and joining it. And Johnny has put her in touch with this guy called the modestly monikered Mr. Phenomenal, who sells all kinds of super tech. So Summer's gone to visit him to see about getting her own superpowers.
Right. Now, when she talks to him, since this is issue 11, can we talk about this, or is this something we
should worry about? Yeah, anything in issue 11 we can talk.
Okay. Because she's talking to him, and he proposes that Summer, says an opening's recently come up for another user, you'd be connecting with a guy with telekinesis and a girl who can manipulate glass.
Yeah.
Says their powers are pretty low level, but it's in combining your abilities that you all get the power you need. She says, you'll need to contact them. I'll text your numbers, give them a call. And she goes, okay. She's so ready to do it. And of course, she gets interrupted in the middle of this. Now, that's an interesting power to have. The manipulating glass struck me interesting because Ruby Kay gets her power from a pair of glasses.
Yes.
Is that something that we might see develop as time goes along, or is that going to be, or am I just sort of swinging for the fence here?
Yeah, I mean, the glasses thing, it's not with Ruby Kay's glasses, it's the chip in them that gives her the powers. The actual glass in them is just the same as anything else. So I don't really see that there's anything Summer could utilize with that. But how this works, this setup that Mr. Phenomenal is hooking Summer up with is called the Hive, which is a power sharing crew of three people, one of which is left again, so there's a vacancy. So they each have like a tech armband that lets them power share. So once, if Summer takes this on, she's where we're at with issue 11 is the guys, Mr. Phenomenal's advice, she meets the other two members of the Hive before committing to it. But if she does commit to it, she gets a band that the other two have where they can share their powers. And that means she has access to Pete Stenson's low level telekinesis, as in he's not exactly Magneto. And Glassy Lady has the ability to manipulate glass. So what that amounts to is when combining Pete and Glassy Lady's powers, say you get a pane of glass and smash it into fragments, then the telekinesis can fire these fragments of glass. That's like the most sort of aggressive use for it.
Okay.
But other things can be done. Yeah, she can manipulate glass. That basically means she can change the shape of glass. So, however she sees fit. And we also, when we meet her in issue 12, we see she's not the most, seemingly not the most moralistic of people. I think it's later on issue 13 when she demonstrates her powers to Summer, and I won't give away what that is, but we get Summer's a bit like, right.
Well, she might of course want to use those powers for in a better way.
Yeah, but you are the three are tied together. So this is the thing. They have these power sharing bracelets. So they can only access these powers when all three are activating these bracelets. Now, Summer doesn't have any powers. So what she's bringing to the party is just that she can fight.
Okay. So they all have to three do it at the same time? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're basically when they've all – someone calls one up and says, right, I want to use the powers for something now. They down. If they all are, they all activate these bands. Now, they can all be together. They can all meet up, or one can, you know, just go and – in Summer's case, she can on her own be going around using the glass and telekinetic powers.
Okay, that's interesting how she does that. So she can get both those powers if yeah, how does this work when they share?
Basically, yeah. Once if all three of them activate them, then they can all access those powers. As I say, the difference with Summer is she doesn't have superpowers. So she's if the other two want, because the deal that's going to be happening here is she wants this to give her powers to join the super team. They want. Well, okay, that's fine. You can use our powers in the super team, but if we want help from you, you're going to be coming down here to be, hit people, basically.
Okay, because I like Summer. I'm really interested in what happens with her. I knew she wouldn't be able to stay in the sidelines very long. This is going to be a real interesting development to her, because she's the one who's the believer in superheroes and doing right and stuff like that. If she's tied to somebody who's not as morally together as she is, she's going to have some trouble with that, I would imagine.
Yes, and the fact that they're, you know, sort of symbiotically really linked together. I mean, she doesn't know who these people are until she individually meets them during the course of this arc. And the first one she meets, Pete, is known as Pete the Pimp. So his primary business is he's a pimp. So again, morality, not the biggest strong suit here.
Does she get influenced by these other people as far as morality goes?
Well, this is all to remaining to be seen. I mean, at this stage, she's meeting them to see if she wants to do this thing.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting. So she may or may not do that at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, I like that character. I'm not sure she should do that at this point.
Yeah. But she's kind of, you know, driven by, she's always had, as I say, she kind of pushed for the whole geek girl thing to the degree of like designing Ruby's costume. She's a fashion student, Summer. So she's so into this whole thing, and that might sort of override any concerns about the, dubious morality of her would-be teammates.
Yikes. Okay. Well, can we, let's talk about the, there's another storyline going on that's interesting. It says in the description, there's a nice description in the early pages. It says that the geek girl took down burgeoning supervillain team, the League of Larcenists. Mm-hmm. Two of them escaped, and one of them, Delphi Matrix, later found footage from a spy revealing that the League's boss, Pighead, who still grosses me out.
Yeah, that'd be your face.
Was removed from the was removed from the crime scene before the police arrived to take them away. So Delphi uses the teleporter and goes into her apartment and finds a dog woman chained up there. She frees dog woman, who asks to see the spy cam, and then we see in issue 11 that she wants Delphi to shave her so she can go out in public, which I find really interesting. So what's going on with those characters? I find that an interesting line.
I think that probably needs a bit of exposition.
Okay.
There was the League of Larcenists, a burgeoning supervillain team that Geek Girl and other superheroes collectively took down. Most of them got jailed, but Delphi escaped along with Terry. Two of them escaped, and then Delphi has got hold of the, they were in like a warehouse, and Terry and Delphi escaped in the van, the League of Larcenists truck, and found that there is footage in it, including what happened in the warehouse. There was a camera set up in the warehouse, so everything was being recorded, and they found that whereas the rest of the League of Larcenists that got taken down were taken away by police, Pighead was removed from the scene before the police arrived. So they're on a mission to find Pighead, basically, and part of the reason they're on the mission to find it. So Delphi's gone into the teleport. It's getting complicated again. When they escaped the scene, Delphi and Terry also took the League of Larcenists teleporter. Now, this is something that Delphi's very interested in, but hasn't quite figured out, but it has sort of default settings on of it. So she's trying these out, and one of them takes her into this apartment, which belongs to Pighead and Dog Woman. And this is how what you just set up comes about, that Delphi encounters Dog Woman, and they embark on this journey to find Pighead.
Okay, it does not surprise me that Pighead is keeping Dog Woman chained up in the apartment. Yeah. That does not surprise me. I'm almost afraid to ask this question. Is there a relationship between Pighead and Dog Woman that we're going to find out about?
Yeah, there is, and she's got the sort of a dog-like sex drive, and the reason she's being chained up is because Pighead can't trust her to not fool around.
Oh my goodness! Oh, okay.
Now, she doesn't look that, you know, attractive a proposition when Delphi encounters her chained up and she's all hairy like a dog. But when they embark on their quest to find Pighead, as you said, Dog Woman has Delphi help shave her, and underneath all the hair, she's a very attractive lady, but she still is a dog woman.
Okay, I guess we're going to find out more about that as we need to.
Absolutely, yeah.
Dare I say, why are they trying to find Pighead?
Well, For Dog Woman's motivation, it's a massive spoiler if I tell you what.
Okay, we don't have to know that, but why is Delphi trying to find?
So for Delphi, it's like she was a part of the League of Arsonists. They got away when the rest of the League of Arsonists got taken down. We've got that most of the League of Arsonists are in jail, but the exception, apart from Terry and Delphi who escaped, is Pighead. Pighead is the leader of the League of Arsonists. So get Pighead back, get the League of Arsonists back.
Okay. All right, so they want to do that. Okay, so that's interesting to see because that is a whole other storyline that's going to gross me out. I'm just convinced of it. But
yeah, well, for those that haven't had the pleasure of the visuals of Kickstarter of Pighead is that his head has been sort of fused with half of a pig's.
Yes, hence the name.
You can see why him and Dog Woman are a good match.
I'm sorry. What it is about that character that just always grosses me out. Everything that when anything to do with Pighead, even his speech is different. His words are in a black word balloon and white words, which means he sounds different than other people.
Yeah, he's sort of like bleh, sounding, and as is Dog Woman sounds sort of growly as well. So again, they're a good match. The only problem is Dog Woman's lack of fidelity.
Jeepers. Okay. More, we're going to have to go down that road, I guess, eventually. So
Oh yeah.
Okay, so where do we stand now? The Kickstarter is going on, it's going to conclude. It has, what issues are available through the Kickstarter?
So, like, you can get all the previous issues as well as the brand new ones. And you can also get, like, the Identity Crisis arc is a really good jump on point. So you can get the new issues of that, which the Identity Crisis runs from issue 10, the prologue, through to issue 15, and you can get all of that in a pack on the Kickstarter. You can also get the Jump On Deluxe issue 11 as its own thing. So yeah, you can get everything. And what I like about the Kickstarter is this Kickstarter is usually I always do two new issues because in terms of shipping costs, it's a much better, you know, way for customers than just shipping one, because international shipping for one thing is expensive, but it's not much more expensive to ship two comics than it is to ship one. But I put a thing out saying, because I've actually gotten ahead of schedule on Geek Girl, I put a thing out asking if people would be up for seeing three issues. And everyone that responded, it was basically like just respond with a two or three for the next Kickstarter, and every response I got was three. So what that gives us the opportunity to do is have, as I said, the whole Identity Crisis arc on there together. So you can come in on that and get, you know, that complete story, which is, as I say, going to be a real change vessel for Geek Girl. And you could also, if you want to get the entire series that preceded it, as you can get all that as well.
Okay, because I noticed on the one page, does Marcosia do the books in the UK as well as the US, or is that just the US?
No, it's international, and like outside and inside of the Kickstarter, you can get all of the comics digitally as well.
Okay, because I noticed on one of the pages it mentions the three volumes, and they have individual titles. Volume 1 is Lightning Strikes, Volume 2 is Crime War, and Volume 3 is Team Geek Girl. So those are the predecessors to Identity Crisis.
Yeah, I mean, basically, if you wanted to get all the miniseries, all the ongoing so far, then you can get the three trade paperbacks that you just mentioned and the Identity Crisis arc.
So you've been working on Geek Girl for a long time. It's really interesting because you've worked on other stuff. You and I talked about the Almighties at one point, and there's other things going on. So I have to tell you that you were way ahead of the curve when it came to female lead characters. your book came out. I mean, right now, if you go and look at many comics, I mean, they've even made Thor a female at one point. There are all different kinds of female leads and stuff like that. But, I mean, in 2009, you were doing this way ahead of what other people were doing. So I have to tell you, man, that was a real accomplishment for you to get to jump ahead of what is now a big trend. So all I can say is that congratulations on being ahead of the curve.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, like you mentioned other stuff I've done. I mean, I'm always interested in strong female characters, and the other book, which actually connects, ties in with Geek Girl, is Carbaccini Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman, which is another female character. And there's going to be a crossover between the two of them coming up after the identity crisis arc. Carbaccini is a much darker character, an ex hooker who took down a pimp boyfriend by means of discovering voodoo and swapped her addiction for cracked. Her addiction to voodoo. It's darker. Quite a different character. But yeah, there's a collision coming between the two beyond the identity crisis art. That's actually going to be probably the thing that follows straight after it.
Okay, I was going to say that's not going to happen during identity crisis, I hope.
No, there's enough going on there as it is. And as I say, Ruby's got her own things to deal with during that.
Because that would be scary. That would be even worse.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
So, man, you've had this whole arc and this whole history with Geek Girl planned out way in advance. Because obviously you're talking about months ahead from now, you're going to be doing all these good things.
Yeah. I mean, we've got another great thing about it is Grander, C. Grander, the artist, has been on it from the start of the miniseries through every issue of the ongoing, including the fake Geek Girl one shot. We've sorted out a schedule in order to facilitate having three new issues on this Kickstarter, 13 to 15. We've sorted out a schedule. So he's staying with it and really enjoys it. And Chunlin Zhao, the colorist, has been on every issue except one of the mini and ongoing, still there. And same with Paul McLaren. So everyone's really into it. And it's though I have things plotted out, I do like to keep things unpredictable, even for myself. What's going to be going on with Geek Girl with this whole identity crisis thing is not something I envisage, but it's something that is very true to the character.
Wow. Okay. So, wow. Really great stuff. That crossover is going to be interesting. Of course, I got to see how this resolves first, because this is just wild stuff. What's the goal you're after on the Kickstarter? How much?
We're going for $5,000, I believe, but we're aiming for beyond that, because this is three new issues as well as all of the previous ones. Yeah, but the initial goal is for $5,000.
Wow. Okay. So very good. Very good. Hopefully you hit that and hit a whole bunch of stretch goals and have all kinds of good things going on with that. Of course, that leads me to ask, I mean, it sounds like Geek Girl takes up most of your time, but are there other projects you're working on, or does Geek Girl and Carbaccini and them, do they keep you busy all the time pretty much?
Yeah, at the moment they do, and because I'm really into them both, and also, as I say, they're heading towards a crossover. I'm not really looking for anything else right now. As I say, I'm ahead of schedule on Geek Girl. I mean, I've so many ideas that I want to, get out there, and I'm excited about the direction things are going in. So this does it for me at the moment.
Okay, so you're no longer looking to write Deadpool anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that's always something. I mean, you're going back to, there was a period where that was something I was really gunning for, and that was quite a few years ago now. And I realized at the time that I wasn't sort of established enough. I mean, now I've got, a lot of issues of Geek Girl and Color under my belt. I mean, I feel like I'm in a better, more realistic position for that. But right now, you know, obviously that's a tough gig to land anyway. But right now I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And Deadpool is getting a new ongoing series in April, which I'm looking forward to, because they kind of, there was a thing in, when I was, the last time I was really into it was when it was Jerry Duggan writing it and Deadpool's daughter was brought into it. And that kind of, they kind of tried to get away from all that and go back to just the straight merc stuff. Whereas I felt like, you know, they'd really done some good development there. And it seems like, well, it doesn't seem like it's been signposted that the Deadpool's daughter is going to be a big part of this new ongoing. So I'm interested to see where they go with that.
What about the movie?
Oh, the movie. Yeah, I mean, the movie, I can't see any way that that's not going to be great. I saw the Super Bowl trailer. I'm all over that movie. I mean, okay. Ryan Reynolds is absolutely perfect for the role and clearly loves playing Deadpool. So, yeah, that movie, I think, I can't really see that one going wrong.
Okay, well, it's Geek Girl Identity Crisis, and it's on Kickstarter. It's going to go through March, and you want to be sure to back it so that we can get more of these. And you can, as you can tell, Sam has many of these things planned out, so he's got lots of Geek Girl stories to tell us, and we want to get to see them too. So, Sam, I have to tell you, always wonderful stuff, always great to talk with you. All I can say is just keep doing the wonderful stuff you're doing because we're enjoying it.
Thank you. Yeah, as I say, all the creative team is still there, all these issues in, and I'm really into it. And we've got this jump on arc set up now. So, yeah, it's all good. And geekgirlcomics.com, link, that's your easy, straight link to the Kickstarter.
And that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.